From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. And it's tough to know where to begin today other than by talking about the coronavirus. We are currently in the middle of a national emergency and a global pandemic. Virtually every family has been impacted by closures, cancellations, and now limitations on gatherings of more than 10 people. But we do have some important information that we want to get out today about the state legislature and what government is doing in response to this crisis and how we can be praying and serving others throughout this time. And so the first thing that we wanted to talk about today, of course, again, everything is being impacted and closed, and there's so much happening right now, and that does include the Nebraska state legislature. Last week, they adjourned, and that they are now on a temporary leave of absence. The legislature has closed down, but they can still come back later this year and finish the session. So essentially, the state legislature has pressed the pause button. We don't know when they will reconvene or when that might be. So basically, this is just an indefinite leave of absence. So what that means is that currently they're on day 41 of what was supposed to be a 60-day working session. So while they are on leave, they're not losing legislative days. When they are able to reconvene and conduct business again in the state capitol, they will pick up where they left off on day 41 and then could continue the session until they hit that 60 working day mark. There is not a specific day that they have to adjourn for the year by or end the session. So they will continue to see how the situation unfolds. Everything, of course, is very fluid right now. And so there's a lot to be determined. We don't know what's going to happen and when we can expect state senators to start meeting again. But all we can report right now is that they're on an indefinite leave of absence, and we will keep you updated on what we find out. And of course, there's a lot still pending in the Nebraska legislature, some really important proposals from everything ranging from property tax relief to education and new proposals for business incentives, as well as LB 814, which would end the practice of dismemberment abortion. That was a top priority for NFA this year, and there's currently a poll motion still pending before the body. We were hoping last week before things were canceled that was going to come to a vote and state senators would have the opportunity to vote to pull that bill out of committee so it can be debated and voted on by the full legislature. And our hope is that will be able to happen later this year once the legislature is able to reconvene. And with so much uncertainty and chaos and fear right now, we do have what I think is some very encouraging news to share. And that is that this past week, Nebraska Family Alliance hosted a conference call with Governor Pete Ricketts, specifically for pastors and ministry leaders in Nebraska, about how we can all be responding to the coronavirus, and specifically what pastors and churches can do to continue to serve our communities. And we're excited to share that over 500 pastors and ministry leaders from all across Nebraska joined us on that conference call. And it was amazing. You know, this came together at the last minute, and to see so many leaders and pastors and ministry leaders from different organizations and nonprofits from all across the state coming together to ask really important questions, to get the latest information and updates, and see what the church and the people of God can be doing right now in responding to this crisis. We have leaders that are stepping up, asking, what can we do? How can we serve? How can we continue to love our neighbor? And how can we continue to proclaim the good news of the gospel during this time? And this is important because as Christians, we are profoundly different from the rest of the world. We think differently, we see things differently, and hopefully we live our lives differently. And so as the coronavirus pandemic is continuing to unfold and causing unprecedented changes to our way of life, the question that has been at the forefront of my mind this week is, how can I reflect Christ and how can I be different from the rest of the world during this time and try to demonstrate Christ's love for us and for the world? And I think there's a number of different things that as believers we all can and should be doing during this time. And number one is to pray, and not a flippant thoughts and prayers type of thing, but a genuine determination to pray on our knees for our nation, for our citizens, for our leaders, for our medical professionals, and for everyone who is vulnerable right now to this pandemic. I think it's essentially, it's so critical right now to be praying, especially for those in authority, our elected leaders. They're having to make so many tough decisions right now. They really need our prayers because they need a lot of wisdom and guidance on how to lead our state and our country through this time right now, as well as for all of those who are serving and working in the medical community on the front lines, taking care of those who are sick or in need. And we just need to cover them with prayer at this time. And then next, I think we just need really to try not to fret, because even in the midst of crisis, our trust is in the Lord, and we know that God is still in control. And so throughout this time, we also need to be seeking truth. There's so much information coming at us right now from all over. We need to seek the truth and be reflective of that in our conversations with others or with what we're saying and writing on social media, and encourage others to be safe and not to politicize this, and to find credible sources rather than someone pushing spin or a political agenda. And, you know, next I would say this is an opportunity for us to be joyful. Even in this unprecedented time, find hope and joy in the Lord. Let the world see your family coming together in this challenging time, letting our light shine before others brighter than ever before, that Jesus might be glorified. Next, this is an opportunity to care for others. As we're able, we should all be doing our part to serve and keep others safe. Reach out to those in your network, check in with people, see how they're doing, especially if you have neighbors who might be elderly and need help with getting groceries or necessities, anything like that. We need to be finding ways and being creative, thinking outside the box, and how we can continue to help serve those who are in need, especially the most vulnerable, those who are elderly and sick during this time. And lastly, the last thing I'll just say is really to be patient. No one knows right now how long life will be interrupted. This is not normal. But as believers, what we do know is that God is in control. And as believers, we're called to be patient as we wait patiently for God's timing and patience with our fellow human beings, extending it to everyone we interact with. All of that to say, the coronavirus is a threat to our nation, our state, and our way of life. But this is also an opportunity right now to show how different we are from the world and how the transforming love of Jesus can shine through us even in the worst of circumstances. We hope that you're encouraged to show this difference. And so we want to ask that you would be continuing to pray in the days and weeks and months ahead with Nebraska Family Alliance for five things specifically. And that is, number one, to be praying for protection and for containment of the coronavirus. Second, pray for our nation's leaders that they would have wisdom and how to deal with the virus. Third, pray for medical professionals that God would guide and protect them as they treat those affected. Fourth, pray for our brothers and sisters whose businesses and job stability has been impacted. And fifth, pray especially for those who are the most vulnerable to the effects of the virus. This is something we all can be doing and should be doing. So please, we would ask that you continue to join us in praying for protection, praying for our nation's leaders, praying for our medical professionals, praying for those who have lost a job, and praying for the vulnerable right now, especially the elderly and sick who need our compassion and care. Unfortunately, even at a time like this, not everyone's priorities are in the right place and things are being politicized. In fact, we're going to get to this in a moment. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, initially even tried to include funding for abortion in the House coronavirus bill. I mean, that's where things are at right now in our country, even in the middle of a national emergency and health crisis. We can't even get a bill through the House to respond to what's happening without having a debate about taxpayer funding of abortion and trying to include taxpayer dollars for abortion services in a coronavirus bill. But part of what we want to do today is help connect people to what our government leaders are saying and talking about and what's been taking place in Congress at our nation's capital. And one of our own congressmen from Nebraska, Don Bacon, put out a really excellent video last week updating people with what's been happening. And again, things are changing every day. But this is what Omaha Congressman Don Bacon had to say in a video that he released last week.
I'm reaching out to share information concerning the coronavirus threat so that you can be reassured that your government is working for you. This is the time to pull together and unify as Nebraskans, Americans, and neighbors to tackle the situation head on. We know the coronavirus spreads more easily than the regular flu and is more lethal. Our immediate goals are to contain the virus to the maximum extent possible, treat those who become ill, and rapidly field a vaccine. Protecting the elderly and those at risk is also a priority. And we need to provide relief to those who become temporarily unemployed because of this health emergency. I have met with the White House team in person multiple times and have also had several phone calls. I know the president and his team are trying their very best to respond and prepare for every possibility. The early travel bans with China and then Iran bought us extra time. The fact is that this is a worldwide pandemic and our country is not immune. We've already seen loss of life in our country, and we grieve. Congress's first action was to pass an $8.3 billion supplemental bill that includes $4 billion to speed up vaccine research and better treatments, and $2.2 billion in prevention and preparedness efforts within the CDC. Our local authorities told me they needed funds to defray unexpected expenses, and our supplemental bill targeted some of these costs as well. We're also spending funds to speed up testing kit production. Although the FDA found a defect in the first version, we are now making up time and producing 4 million kits a week. The bill also provided disaster assistant loans for impacted small businesses. It's important to know that the agencies who are working this are well-funded. Over the last 5 years, the CDC has seen a 24% increase and the NIH a 39% increase. And thankfully, the infectious disease response team saw a 70% growth. Our researchers, to include some at UNMC, are working hard to get a vaccine ready. Testing will begin within 2 months, which typically lasts for roughly a year. Our medical experts will do everything possible to expedite. We're now working on a second bill with the goal of helping those who have their employment interrupted, or need to care for their children while schools are closed. Discussions on multiple options are currently being held. I also want to ensure that this second bill pays for the testing so that we can more quickly determine who needs care and target our resources. This is not the time to be playing politics by dropping in political priorities in the middle of the night. In addition, I have focused on removing barriers that are impeding mass production of respirators and masks. Our medical teams need them, and the demand is high. In years past, the manufacturers of these respirators were given liability protections similar to what is given to other medical equipment in time of emergencies. The respirator protections expired, and we're close to getting this renewed. I appreciate the partnership on this legislation with Senator Deb Fischer. I also want to thank our governor and local mayors for their leadership. They are working hard to reduce risk by making determinations on what events we should cancel. They have also done a great job working with UNMC and other medical providers. They are living up to the phrase, hope for the best, but plan for the worst. The personnel at UNMC and Camp Ashland have made us proud once again with the absolute professionalism they've shown. Our thanks are not enough for the work they have done on the front lines of the situation. As a community, we all have a role to suppress the spread of this virus. Elbow bumps instead of handshakes, frequent cleaning of hands, avoid touching the face, and covering sneezes and coughs are now more important than ever. If we're not feeling well, we need to stay home and call a doctor. It's hard for an elected official to not shake hands, but safety demands we all do it. It is also important to have several weeks' supply of food, key medicines, and essentials for our family pets. Now, this is the time to stay calm, but make prudent precautions. Our country is the strongest in the world. We have the best research and innovation. We will overcome and tackle this threat together. I learned from my five commands and three decades in the Air Force that unified teams overcome and rise above. Now, I hear from many who are praying and finding ways to help others. I thank you. We will tackle this threat together. Now, for more information, please visit my website at bacon.house.gov. Thank you very much.
So a lot of important information in there from Congressman Bacon, and we do appreciate all of our elected leaders who are stepping up right now and doing their best for the people of Nebraska. But one of the things that Congressman Bacon alluded to in his message there was people trying to sneak certain political things in the middle of the night into the House bill. And what that is referring to, again, was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tried sneaking pro-abortion language into the House coronavirus bill. So while you and millions of Americans are hunkered down in their homes and people are doing their best trying to save lives during this time, we have Democrats in the House trying to help end lives by putting pro-abortion language in the coronavirus bill. And this is absolutely appalling. Government leaders right now at every level are taking unprecedented action to protect American lives. And simultaneously, House Speaker Pelosi thought it would be a good idea to use this crisis to seek funding to take more lives through abortion. Speaker Pelosi's coronavirus plan initially included a $1 billion funding stream with a provision that would have excluded the Hyde Amendment, which has protected against taxpayer funding of abortion for decades. This started last week, last Saturday, in the wee hours of the morning. The first version of this House bill that passed through Speaker Nancy Pelosi's chamber included this pro-abortion language, and after word leaked out that Democrats had tried to tack on a secret slush fund for abortion, even people at MSNBC couldn't hide their shock. What does that have to do with COVID-19? Joy Reid asked. And I think that's what a lot of people were asking. And thankfully, when the White House got wind of this plan, President Trump wasted no time warning House leaders what would happen to the bill if it got to him with that language. Absolutely nothing. Keeping a promise he made at the March for Life in 2019, the president's administration made it crystal clear that he would not allow Pelosi to hijack the crisis with plans to undo the Hyde Amendment and provide funds for abortion. And thankfully, that pressure from the White House worked. By the time the House voted, the language that would have compromised the Hyde Amendment was removed. And sadly, this is another reminder of why we always need to be vigilant. Because even during a crisis, even during a national emergency, this issue remains front and center. And in an interview after this came out, this is what Nebraska U.S. Senator Ben Sasse had to say in response to this provision that was initially in the House bill from Speaker Pelosi. Senator Sasse said, quote, "While schools are closing and hospitals are gearing up, Speaker Pelosi is waging unnecessary culture wars. Speaker Pelosi should be fighting the coronavirus pandemic, not politicizing emergency funding by fighting against the bipartisan Hyde Amendment. We need to be ramping up our diagnostic testing, not waging culture wars at the behest of Planned Parenthood. Good grief." End quote. And that's exactly right. That's exactly what our leaders should be doing, not trying to get more funding to Planned Parenthood or using taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions and end the lives of innocent children in the womb instead of helping to protect American lives during this time. So because of the White House, we eventually, last week, were able to see the House approve a coronavirus testing and spending bill without this pro-abortion language. And it's despicable to me that the abortion industry would attempt to use this crisis and politicize the coronavirus in an attempt to push for taxpayer funding of abortion. And so we owe a big thank you to the president's administration right now for their unwavering pro-life leadership and for not signing things into law that have nothing to do with what we're talking about right now and had absolutely no business being in that coronavirus bill. In a statement, Susan B. Anthony List President Marjorie Dannis Filler said, quote, "The Trump administration showed unyielding pro-life resolve by successfully applying the Hyde Amendment to funds in the coronavirus supplemental bill. This is vital to continue a long-standing precedent that health-related funds be life-affirming. The last thing Americans should have to worry about is whether or not emergency funds used for legitimate health purposes could be ill-used for abortion or abortion-related services. We thank President Trump for his unwavering pro-life leadership." Speaker Pelosi's gambit was outrageous for a lot of reasons. She was trying to capitalize on Americans' fears and the urgency of the situation to try to sneak through a measure to exclude long-standing bipartisan pro-life protections. At a time when most Americans are unified around saving lives, her devotion to the abortion industry was so strong that she was trying to use this crisis to advance a policy that will take more lives. The bottom line, no matter the timing or the situation, forcing taxpayers to pay for abortions is always wrong. Thankfully, this attempt was exposed and ultimately defeated. For more information on the latest news impacting family, freedom, and life, visit our website at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. We'll be back next week with more updates and information. Until then, I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.